there could be a point in 2 years where we bring in something drastic and we just ruin footy for a couple of years and we're going to take it out again.
I know Whitey wasn't overly wrapped with the Thursday night footy, but I think it's the best time slot in footy. The
beauty about our club is we rock up to training every day, and training's so fun. Everyone wants to train.
The overwhelming feeling is unsatisfaction, and purely because we're so close to winning the whole thing.
It's an opposition coach who presents every single week, but in the end, we play our brand of football the same. I think there's a finding work for someone.
Your ticket into the heart of football. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Nice to have you with us on the Inner Sanctum on the Breakfast Club, and nice to have Max Gawn back in 2019 with us from the D's. Good morning to you, Max.
Thanks for having me back. I was a little bit lost for 5 months not coming in here every Tuesday.
You just found yourself in the car, just wandering.
I still drove all the way here. I just waited out the front.
You are opening the batting. You are the first up for the year, first one. That was like Total Recall then, remember? Back on our radio station, Daniel, about 20 years ago, we used to have Total Recall, where you have to name the five voices.
Oh, yes.
And you win the cash.
Yes.
There was one of those voices, I had no idea who it was.
What, on the promo?
Yeah.
Was that the one that has serious fun at training? Was that
one? Yeah, I think it was that one.
Who was it? You got
Sean
no idea.
Grigg. Sean Grigg.
So it had to be a Richmond player.
That's right.
So everyone's having fun when you win every game in the grand final.
How much fun are you having at training at the moment, Max?
I'd say most clubs would be having a fair bit of fun at this time of the year. Round one's the best time. Everyone's got finals hopes and premiership hopes. I remember people ask me, am I worried about the expectations of the club, but the internal stuff in 2012 when we won the Wooden Spoon, I thought we were going to win the flag that year. So internally, you're always very positive at round one.
Are you more positive about the D's this year or the Jaffel business? What's going on with the van? I need to find out what's happened with the van.
Jaffel's is going well.
We've been sitting on this all summer. We missed the boat last year.
We've been following the Melbourne FC, the girls around.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the Carlton haven't gone down to Casey.
No, we're trying to avoid that place.
So,
they're a blockbuster team. They're only playing the big venues.
Correct. Very windy down there, Max.
So it's been down there. No, the Jaffel van's going well. Jaffel truck.
Sorry, my apologies.
No tomato in the Jaffel.
What's your best day, sales day? Where do you...
The Melbourne FC family day we went to, which was a good day. Everyone wanted to...
What about
to,
day of the week, is it?
It's your weekends. Your weekends, Saturday, yeah. Sunday. Yeah.
Your hangover food.
Yeah, you're almost done. We don't even drive out Monday to Thursday.
Can't believe there's no tomato. You're going to lose business. I'm just trying to help.
No way.
I'm just trying to help.
I agree. No tomato.
I'm just trying to help.
Cooked tomato, no good.
Yeah, soggy. Yep. No good.
Although we are
it's
doing
like lettuce, mate.
We are doing
don't
cooked
lettuce and cook it.
We are doing cooked avocado, which is an issue.
See, there you go.
Cooked avocado. Right.
No, this is good.
What's the difference?
You're coming along. You're working it out, Max. This will make you a million.
What do you do with cooked avocado as opposed to avocado?
Well, no, sorry. You just put avocado in the Jaffel.
Right. Hot avocado.
Yeah, sorry.
It's like hot tomato. Yeah. It's a similar sort of concept. So what's your main seller?
The chicken and avocado and mayonnaise. And it's Kewpie mayonnaise, you know, that on-trend Japanese mayonnaise that everyone has?
Yeah, I wouldn't trust that. I wouldn't go there.
Right, eh?
It's got to be Kraft mayonnaise, just straight out.
No cheese? They don't put the cheese in
there?
Yeah,
combo, cheese. All of them have cheese. Sorry.
All of them have
cheese. I just
thought
that was a no-brainer. Dude, and butter and bread. Did you need to know that as well?
Well, you didn't say cheese, mate. It's an addition.
Yeah, it is.
The butter and bread are absolutely crucial to the Jaffel, otherwise you can't Jaffel.
Yep, correct.
Or do you pita?
We actually have a dessert one, which is puff pastry.
There you go.
Yeah. It's an apple pie and peanut butter.
Oh,
it works. It works.
Does it?
Your facial expression there. Wish I never said that.
Not sure about that.
It works.
What I am sure about is game number 100 for you this week, Big Max.
Yeah. Taking a while. Average 9.9 games a year at the moment, which it's probably not the best record. The first 5 years, I got about 16 games out, so a lot of knee recos. 9 knee operations all up, and I won't be that guy who gets to play 300 or 250 or probably 200.
Technology doesn't sleep, mate. Something might come along.
200 might even be a stretch, but pretty proud of this milestone, even though there's some milestones going out of this week, like Jack Rewalt. He's got a kid in 250 in 1 week. I think he wins the milestone. it's still pretty proud for me.
Yeah, it's a great effort. And I think at the start of your career, as you mentioned, we hear all these guys these days coming in and playing 10, 15 games in their first year, and it just sort of rolls on. But when you have to work and earn your spot and get your body right after injury like you've had to do, I imagine that's quite satisfying to get to a situation like this where you get to a milestone like this.
It is, and I wouldn't change it as well. I mean, I could have played a lot of games early on if I didn't get the injuries, but it made me grow up quicker than I probably would have, and I turned into an adult and fast-tracked becoming an adult real quickly. So those knee recos made me grow up real quickly.
You've gone from the number two Domino's pizza maker to the number one All-Australian ruckman. So it's a good combo.
Yeah, and look, I probably had a career at Domino's lined up and probably could have stayed there, to be honest. I never got to be a delivery driver there. I was obviously finished before I was 18, and that was something I was really excited to do. So it's still something I might go back to.
Just be a franchise holder these days.
Well, I'm not sure if that's the smartest decision, being a Domino's franchise holder.
I don't know. That was my first job.
What, Domino's?
Delivering pizzas, absolutely. Very, very...
Do they all make their way to the...
No. Yeah, the best part about it was that at the end of...
Honestly, how many times did you...
No, I'm not going to eat someone else's pizza. At the end of the session, the driving session, you could choose something on the menu to have, which was the real bonus.
What
pizza? Where'd you
work?
At a local pizza place, yeah. But it was good for the clutch control. When you just got your license, because I was doing it around near Warrandyte, near dirt roads and dark driveways and all sorts of things. You had to really drive your car very well. And then you get the chicken parmigiana at the end of the night and learn how to make pizzas. That was part of the deal.
There you go.
Anyway, sorry.
Told you in good stead, clearly.
My wife was a Pizza Hut chick. She worked at Pizza Hut, and at the end of the night they go to KFC, they ring KFC, and they get all the KFC brought up to Pizza Hut, and the delivery drivers would take the pizza down to KFC because they were sick of each other's food.
Hybrid version.
Smart. So because they were sick of the food that they always had, so they just did the combo.
I had that deal with Subway.
Great courage.
We had a Subway just down the road.
Yeah.
It was a smart little transaction.
KFC and Pizza Hut together. What a wonderful world that would be.
What's the vibe like, Rexy, at the D's? Game number 100 is pretty cool for you, but there's a bigger picture at play for you after last season. What's the vibe like?
Obviously, we're only as good as our last game, and that's a game that we always think about.
But you don't watch it?
No, we don't. I didn't watch it at all because when it's your last game of the year, you don't have a review. I certainly didn't have Fox Footy on while I was in LA the next day. So it's something I haven't gone back to. And obviously, there might be demons when we do go to Perth or we do play West Coast. But it's something we'll get to then. But looking before that, probably had the best season we've had and able to make a prelim final. So you got to look at it probably from that direction going into this year, and we're all pretty excited to. But we got to improve. We still finish fifth, and the sides below us are probably trying to get higher, and the sides above us are trying to stay there. So it's not just going to, because we made a prelim, it's not just going to roll in and we're going to make a prelim again.
Has the coaches, they obviously would have reviewed the game, but have they referred to that game in the areas where you need to improve out of that game to get better during the preseason?
Not necessarily line coaches or goodie, but some of the guys around the mental aspect of the game have. Obviously, we got psychologists and sports performance people that are involved in the club, and they're the guys that sort of...
What were the outcomes and what were the...
It was just where our headspace got to post a four-goal deficit in the first 5-6 minutes. And for anyone that did watch the game, it wasn't necessarily West Coast were dominating us in those first 5 minutes. They just... I think Jordan Lewis hit someone behind the play. There was a goal.
Yeah.
We had a missed kick and a goal from that. And just where our mindset got to as soon as that happened.
Is that a result during the game, or you felt maybe the build-up to the game and because of the position you're in it affected you mentally, or you...
No one from the findings that we've had from talks around that would blame preparation. So it would be purely during the game. And
not so much physical. What about your mental prep in terms of individual?
Yeah, still no one could blame it. Yep. Everyone seemed to have... Obviously, we were off the back of 7 days and had to travel, but that's footy. I mean, that's what got dealt. And I've said publicly, I love the trip to Perth. Apart from the 2 hours, I got to play in a prelim interstate in a one-eyed state. Breakfast was one of the more interesting things I've had. I went out to a cafe in the suburbs of Perth, and the cops were joking about tasering me while I was ordering coffee. It was a bizarre weekend. The night before dinner, walking around the CBD of Perth and West Coast supporters everywhere. Hopefully we play Melbourne prelims if we get into them from now, but that was something that I'll definitely remember.
Because I would imagine it would be a bit of a trap focusing on the last game versus what you're able to do over the entire season, which is, you sort of alluded to it. It was such a groundbreaking season for your football club.
Yeah, and the hardest thing to do is to do that in the exit interviews. So that's obviously 3 days post loss, and you put in a performance like that, but the season you've had, you got to weigh that up. And I thought the coaches had a really good balance in how they set us off to the off-season, so we were able to forget about it during the off-season rather than think about it the whole off-season. And I'm sure when you lost the grand finals, the last thing you want to do is think about it for the whole 2 months in the off-season, so you need some sort of closure there, and they managed to do that, which is good. And then, like we said publicly, like Goody hasn't really spoken about it too much this pre-season, so that's how much everyone's sort of moved on from it.
I remember talking to you early last year about how it all ended when it looked like you were going to play finals and it didn't happen, and you were just gutted, devastated by it. How was your reaction over this summer to the finish? Were you in a better headspace? Were you determined to get back into it straight away to make up for that last game? What was it like for you over the last sort of 6 months?
It's been 3 years in a row where we've gone to the off-season with a really bad feeling. The first one was when we lost to Collingwood in the last game and knocked ourselves out of the finals because West Coast won by 0.07% and got in. And then the year before that, we got smashed by Geelong by 100 points in the last game of the year. And now we make finals and play in a prelim final. It should be the greater feeling around the club. And once again, we let ourselves down the last game. So you give yourself a bit of feeling. And my mental state is to always train as hard as I can to get back to beat that feeling. And sometimes that's not the best mental state to be in. And I've always battled the best runner is the best player, and that's something that I always battle during the off season, but it isn't necessarily the case. And I used to battle a lot of anxiety against players that were good runners, so I get worried about Goldstein going up against Goldstein, but not so much against maybe the best player but not as good as a runner. I'm not
going
to name him because I don't want to pot their running style, but so I used to get worked up about running, and that's something that I've had to change. And so I've gone away this off season and not necessarily smashed myself and tried to get as lean as I could.
Didn't lose 10 kilos?
Lose, well, if I lost another 10, I'd be a wingman, which could work with Prusa now. So so I've come in a different sort of mindset and tried to freshen myself up and develop different parts of my game.
We'll freshen up through the break. We'll talk more about it after the break. If you've just joined us, Max Gawn from the D's has jumped into the studio in the Inner Sanctum. He'll be back as part of the 2019 team. We're very pleased about that. 21 past 7. Plenty more coming up after this on The Breakfast Club.
Exclusive access behind closed doors. The Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Lightning 7 around the home corner. Mighty Max Gawn in front. About 2 lengths in front of Polo Pete. And it's another win for Mighty Max Gawn. And wins by 2 to Polo Pete. Third placing will go Little Rage. And then for the back, Ishmi Barry.
Doesn't matter what code. Doesn't matter what sport. Mighty Max Gawn just keeps on winning. Winning the greyhound from heaven. That's what it is. Max Gawn, who joins us in the Inner Sanctum from the Demons. You're everywhere.
Where was that racing?
That was racing at Cranbourne.
Cranbourne?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Cranbourne. Another winner for Mighty Max Gawn.
I don't mind having a flutter at Cranbourne.
Somewhere near sort of Casey.
What's your go-to? Have you got a colour that you like to...
I'm not a boring man. I like a 5 or a 6 that is relatively short odds, because if they're short odds in the 5 or 6, it means they're an unbelievable dog.
It's true.
So if you run with that method, boxes. Yeah.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Good point.
Thank you.
I'm not sure where Mighty Max came out of at Cranbourne the other night, but great to see Mighty Max Gawn winning races at Cranbourne, and hopefully Mighty Max Gawn will win games with the D's this year. So Port Adelaide this week at the MCG on Saturday afternoon for the fans to get along and celebrate your 100th game. How many changes from the prelim team do you think will be out there this week for the D's?
So no Dom Tyson.
Difficult for him to play.
Yeah, although he's still touch and go. They're working on that in match committee. But and I'm pretty sure that's the only player that left us from the prelim side. And obviously we've gained Prusa and May, but who knows if Prusa will play or not. Stephen won't. I've been asked the question about Prusa heaps. I just generally don't know what good he's going to do. So I'm happy to play as a double ruck or as a forward or whatever good he wants for round one. But that might not be the case. It might be myself taking on Ryder and Lysette by myself. So I think that Bailey Fritz will come back in. He got dropped for the prelim, and he's had a terrific summer, and that could be the only change, Bailey for
Matt Melky. Melky will get up.
He's done what we all say we want to do, have a four-month injury over the preseason and manage to time it to perfection for round one. It's hard to time it to perfection, but he has completely nailed it. So he played in the second JLT at Casey. He didn't that same week. He didn't play in the AFL Todd. And he'd only done 1 week of training leading up to that. And then, obviously, there's been 1 week gap. So he's had 2 weeks of training. And he'll play round
one. Cherry hot. Yeah. It's genius, it is. You can't buy experience.
Well, I just... What's the injury you want? Because you don't want to have surgery. Bit annoying. That might go backwards. He's had recurring hammies.
Yeah, back
and he's
back
actually
hammies,
quite lucky.
Oh, back-related nerve hammy. Yeah,
that's back probably hammies. The one to get.
Yeah, that's always a good one.
Yeah. That's the one.
I know you're sick and tired of being asked about the pre-situation, but it is an intriguing one because you've always, pretty much rucked by yourself. What role did you have in getting him to the footy club? Because one of the reasons he said is because of you. He wanted to be there with you. How did it all unfold?
So I went around one of the days. I'm not sure how many times I caught up with Braden, but I went to one of the days at Goodies, and he needed clarity that I wanted him there. So I said I did. I'm a pretty impatient man, and if Goody thinks Prusy's going to win us a flag, either there as backup or play together, I'm going to try and get him. So I reckon teams should play 18 rucks, but that's probably not going to happen. So two rucks, I'm a big advocate for teams having just a strong ruck group. Even if you play one, just having people there that are putting pressure on them, and if one goes down, there's an ability to swap one straight in. So I think it's a great recruit. Even if he got 0 games out this year or 22 games out this year, I still think it's a great recruit and a smart recruit.
So have you done anything differently yourself? Have you spent more time forward practicing your goal kicking, your marking, learning the forwards craft a little bit as a result of him coming, or has your preseason been the same?
I've spent more time on the ground. He tends to throw me to the ground and ball up to go to throw-ins. He's an incredibly strong person as well. He's 120-odd kilos, so
is he?
He's got a bit of weight on me. Hence why I didn't lose 10 kilos this summer. But we're both doing a lot of set shots. I need to know if I do take a mark forward that I can capitalise. There's not much point in having me there and I'm missing them. So we're both doing a lot of set shots, and you got to prepare as if they might play too. So I have done a bit of forward work, not too much. He's probably done more, but probably a little bit more than what I've done in the previous years.
In all the discussion in the off-season about some of the rule changes in the 666, your name keeps popping up. You and your midfield keep popping up because you seem to be the most effective centre clearance team in the competition. And with no players coming in off the back of a square trying to crowd up your space, do you think it's an area you can get an advantage with the new setup?
I think the key part of that question was centre bounce team. I think the best rucks aren't necessarily going to be that dominant if you can't use your three midfielders. So
yep.
What we got to last year and we haven't had in previous years was we're able to work together as a four in there, and there was times where we had some real momentum and were able to score in quick succession, and hopefully that can happen again this year with the 666 stuff. Teams will still flood in, and we're still flooding in as soon as we can, but they're just starting, 5 metres back. Instead of being on the line, they're on the 50. So it's maybe a 1 second longer clearance opportunity you get. But
that's all you need.
The real advantage is if you do get the clearance, you can kick it into one-on-ones. But if it's a long contest or if it's a slow contest coming out of the centre clearance, it still gets crowded up pretty quickly. The two wingers are coming in. There's usually a half forward from each side coming in. So still can get pretty clustered straight away. But if you get a smooth, one of those clearances that we all dream of, that'll be pretty handy going into a forward line.
Would you get a bit of your group? You get a bit of when you're on in the middle of the ground. Brayshaw and Viney and Jones when he's in there, and Oliver as well. I mean, it's a pretty good crew.
I almost didn't mention him. He would have been.
He would have been flat with that. He would have been flat. I snuck him in late.
Yep.
I just saw his mark at tab.com.au for the Brownlow, so I just I had a look at that. But it's a terrific team, a centre bounce team, and you say team, and it absolutely is. But what you're able to create in terms of game. Effective clearances out of there is better than anyone else's competition. So have you done any more work on that to try and maximise the opportunity?
Yeah, we have, and it's something we do see as a strength, so we do work on it a lot. And we only see it as a strength because I remember I had a chat in here The start of last year, Hawthorn smashed us with the clearances, and we said we went to a lot of work and watched a lot of tape, and since then we sort of bounced back, and there's a direct correlation for us watching our opposition on a Thursday or Friday before the game and being able to perform out there. So that's something we'll keep doing, and we'll go to work on what Ryder and Lysette do with their mids and Pau Pepper and Robbie Gray and Ollie Wines, who won't be there, but and suss out what sort of advantages we can get from their group.
How much work have you done in this the forward setup around the 666, around structure and creating space? And tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel as if at times it's going to be harder to find one-on-ones. What's your view and what you've taken out of the preseason?
I haven't watched too many games. I'm not going to lie.
Just experience at Melbourne at training.
Yep, because I haven't watched too many Melbourne games either. But because they have to start in the 50, so there's not normally six forwards and six defenders in the 50. So therefore, there's not necessarily that much space.
Mm.
The thing is, if you don't have an experienced or a well dropped off a defender that can drops off really well, then you can find one-on-ones. We found it hard to get one of our guys to go help a 1v1 as a defender because they were a bit inexperienced and weren't able to drop off. So it comes with experience, it comes with the best defenders. So I feel like this year there could be some times where defenders are caught out because for so long they've been able to defend 2-on-1.
Yep.
And been able to ask for help. So now it's could be literally 1-on-1s. And the best teams are besides, if we can get Lever back up and back up to his dropping off best, he'll be even more dominant this year than what he was with his mark opposition kicks in the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking only yesterday with Dermot Brereton and Rodney Eade about that whole situation of the potentially defenders being exposed because they have to defend one-on-one as opposed to...
Yeah, but he's still, like, he's referring to experienced better defenders against dumb forward, but that's what you use in footy terms, but playing on guys that run in poor positions where the smarter defenders are still going to find opportunities to provide aerial support.
It's usually when I'm forward, the person that told me.
Yeah, you'll be Davis in the square, mate. Yeah.
Hey, we've got to ask about that. We woke up this morning to the news about Jesse Hogan and the fact that he's out indefinitely, essentially, with anxiety. What happens in that? What's your initial reaction to that, firstly?
Well, mental health is something that is quite prominent in AFL at the moment, and I'm not surprised every time I do see a mental health case because I can see it coming, not necessarily the individual, but I can see it coming from a player within the AFL. It's a very scrutinised competition and players are under more stress than what they've ever been, and I'm there as a support for Jesse. I've texted him this morning, and he's a really close mate, and who knows how much he's battling it and what the actual issue is, but he's been able to tell someone that he is feeling ill, which is the best part, and the choices that you can make when you are ill can be miscued, and like they probably were Saturday night when he went out drinking, that was necessarily because of the illness that he's recognised, and hopefully can get better.
Because I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's a unique set of circumstances for you now because you are a very close mate of his, but you were a teammate, now you're not a teammate, and he's on the other side of the country. That the role you play as a friend versus the role you would play as a teammate, is it different? Is it the same? What role do you play?
Well, it would have been the role as a leader is also very different as well. So leadership group are the people that tend to talk about player issues, and that would have been an interesting dialogue, being a friend, being a leader, and also his illness. So I'm not sure how it would have played out and within the club. It didn't happen when he was at Melbourne, so all I can do is he's now a friend that's in trouble, and he said that he's in trouble, said that he's ill, and all I can do is show support while he's over there. He might not need it. I'm 20-hour drive away, or even more. I don't think he's going to come over and need a cuddle, but just to have support there, I'm sure that'll help people that are going through anxiety.
I'm sure he'd appreciate it as well, hearing that from you as a good mate. So that's Jesse Hogan. We'll talk more about that with Scotty Gullen a little bit later on after the break, in fact. And these fans, get out there on Saturday and see your boys look to start their campaign in 2019 on a strong note against Port Adelaide at the Mighty MCG 145. Get there. And great news for you, Max Gorn, as we say goodbye to you. Mighty Max Gorn's running today at Horsham. And you wouldn't believe what box is coming out of. Race 5. Number five in the yellow.
It's a short favourite in the five box.
$1.90 favourite.
This is ticking a lot of boxes here, Max.
I'm worried about the travel, though. Cranbourne to Horsham and a couple of those. The travel factor might not be good, but
it might be a good start to your week. That's all I'm saying. $1.90 favourite at tab.com.au. Good luck Saturday, mate. Great to see you.
Thanks, boys.
Good luck, mate.
Max Gorn for game number 100 on Saturday as well for the